When Kennedy took office in early 1961, he continued the policies of Truman and Eisenhower in Southeast Asia. Almost immediately, he approved a secret plan for various military actions in Vietnam and Laos, including the dispatch of agents to North Vietnam to engage in sabotage and light harassment, according to the Pentagon Papers. Back in 1956, he had spoken of the amazing success of President Diem and said of Diem's Vietnam, "Her political liberty is an inspiration." One day in June 1963, a Buddhist monk sat down in the public square in Saigon and set himself afire. More Buddhist monks began committing suicide by fire to dramatize their opposition to the Diem regime. Diem's police raided the Buddhist pagodas and temples, wounded 30 monks, arrested 1,400 people, and closed down the pagodas. There were demonstrations in the city. The police fired, killing 9 people. Then, in Hue, the ancient capital, 10,000 demonstrated in protest. Under the Geneva Accords, the United States was permitted to have 685 military advisors in southern Vietnam. Eisenhower secretly sent several thousand. Under Kennedy, the figure rose to 16,000, and some of them began to take part in combat operations. Diem was losing. Most of the South Vietnam countryside was now controlled by local villagers, organized by the NLF. Diem was becoming an embarrassment, an obstacle to effective control over Vietnam. Some Vietnamese generals began plotting to overthrow his regime, staying in touch with a CIA man named Lucien Conan. Conan met secretly with American Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge, who was enthusiastically for the coup. Lodge reported to Kennedy's assistant, McGeorge Bundy, on October 25th, Pentagon Papers. "I have personally approved each meeting between General Tran Van Don and Conan, who has carried out my orders in each instance explicitly." Kennedy seemed hesitant, but no move was made to warn Diem. Indeed, just before the coup, and just after he had been in touch through Conan with the plotters, Lodge spent a weekend with Diem at a seaside resort. When on November 1, 1963, the generals attacked the presidential palace, Diem phoned Ambassador Lodge, and the conversation went as follows. "Diem, some units have made a rebellion, and I want to know what is the attitude of the United States." Lodge, "I do not feel well enough informed to be able to tell you. I have heard the shooting, but am not acquainted with all of the facts. Also, it is 4:30 a.m. in Washington, and the U.S. government cannot possibly have a view." Diem, "But you must have some general ideas." Lodge told Diem to phone him if he could do anything for his physical safety. That was the last conversation any American had with Diem. He fled the palace, but he and his brother were apprehended by the plotters, taken out in a truck, and executed. Earlier in 1963, Kennedy's Undersecretary of State, Hugh Alexis Johnson, was speaking before the Economic Club of Detroit. "What is the attraction that Southeast Asia has exerted for centuries on the great powers flanking it on all sides? Why is it desirable, and why is it important? First, it provides a lush climate, fertile soil, rich natural resources, a relatively sparse population in most areas, and room to expand. The countries of Southeast Asia produce rich exportable surpluses such as rice, rubber, teak, corn, tin, spices, oil, and many others." This is not the language that was used by President Kennedy in his explanations to the American public. He talked of communism and freedom. In a news conference, February 14, 1962, he said, "Yes, as you know, the U.S., for more than a decade, has been assisting the government, the people of Vietnam, to maintain their independence." 3 weeks after the execution of Diem, Kennedy himself was assassinated, and his vice president, Lyndon Johnson, took office. The generals who succeeded Diem could not suppress the National Liberation Front. Again and again, American leaders expressed their bewilderment at the popularity of the NLF, at the high morale of its soldiers. The Pentagon historians wrote that when Eisenhower met with President-elect Kennedy in January 1961, He wondered aloud why, in interventions of this kind, we always seemed to find that the morale of the communist forces was better than that of the democratic forces. And General Maxwell Taylor reported in late 1964, "The ability of the Viet Cong continuously to rebuild their units and to make good their losses is one of the mysteries of the guerrilla war. Not only do the Viet Cong units have the recuperative powers of the Phoenix, but they have an amazing ability to maintain morale. Only in rare cases have we found evidences of bad morale among Viet Cong prisoners or recorded in captured Viet Cong documents." In early August 1964, President Johnson used a murky set of events in the Gulf of Tonkin off the coast of North Vietnam to launch full-scale war on Vietnam. Johnson and Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara told the American public there was an attack by North Vietnamese torpedo boats on American destroyers. While on routine patrol in international waters, McNamara said, the U.S. destroyer Maddox underwent an unprovoked attack. It later turned out that the Gulf of Tonkin episode was a fake, that the highest American officials had lied to the public, just as they had in the invasion of Cuba under Kennedy. In fact, the CIA had engaged in a secret operation attacking North Vietnamese coastal installations, so if there had been an attack, it would not have been unprovoked. It was not a routine patrol because the Maddox was on a special electronic spying mission, and it was not in international waters, but in Vietnamese territorial waters. It turned out that no torpedoes were fired at the Maddox, as McNamara said. Another reported attack on another destroyer 2 nights later, which Johnson called open aggression on the high seas, seems also to have been an invention. At the time of the incident, Secretary of State Rusk was questioned on NBC television. Reporter: what explanation, then, can you come up with for this unprovoked attack? Rusk: well, I haven't been able, quite frankly, to come to a fully satisfactory explanation. There is a great gulf of understanding between that world and our world, ideological in character. They see what we think of as the real world in wholly different terms. Their very processes of logic are different, so that it's very difficult to enter into each other's minds across that great ideological gulf. The Tonkin attack brought a congressional resolution, passed unanimously in the House, and with only 2 dissenting votes in the Senate, giving Johnson the power to take military action as he saw fit in Southeast Asia. 2 months before the Gulf of Tonkin incident, U.S. government leaders met in Honolulu and discussed such a resolution. Rusk said in this meeting, according to the Pentagon Papers, that public opinion on our Southeast Asia policy was badly divided in the United States at that moment, and that, therefore, the president needed an affirmation of support. The Tonkin resolution gave the president the power to initiate hostilities without the declaration of war by Congress that the Constitution required. The Supreme Court, supposed to be the watchdog of the Constitution, was asked by a number of petitioners in the course of the Vietnam War to declare the war unconstitutional. Again and again, it refused even to consider the issue. Immediately after the Tonkin affair, American warplanes began bombarding North Vietnam. During 1965, over 200,000 American soldiers were sent to South Vietnam, and in 1966, 200,000 more. By early 1968, there were more than 500,000 American troops there, and the U.S. Air Force was dropping bombs at a rate unequaled in history. Tiny glimmerings of the massive human suffering under this bombardment came to the outside world. On June 5, 1965, the New York Times carried a dispatch from Saigon. As the communists withdrew from Wangai last Monday, United States jet bombers pounded the hills into which they were headed. Many Vietnamese, one estimate is as high as 500, were killed by the strikes. The American contention is that they were Viet Cong soldiers, but 3 out of 4 patients seeking treatment in a Vietnamese hospital afterward for burns from napalm or jellied gasoline were village women. On September 6th, another press dispatch from Saigon. In Benoit Province, south of Saigon, on August 15th, United States aircraft accidentally bombed a Buddhist pagoda and a Catholic church. It was the third time their pagoda had been bombed in 1965. A temple of the Cao Dai religious sect in the same area had been bombed twice this year. In another Delta province, there is a woman who has both arms burned off by napalm and her eyelids so badly burned that she cannot close them. When it is time for her to sleep, her family puts a blanket over her head. The woman had two of her children killed in the airstrike that maimed her. Few Americans appreciate what their nation is doing to South Vietnam with air power. Innocent civilians are dying every day in South Vietnam. Large areas of South Vietnam were declared free fire zones, which meant that all persons remaining within them, civilians, old people, children, were considered an enemy, and bombs were dropped at will. Villages suspected of harboring Viet Cong were subject to search and destroy missions. Men of military age in the villages were killed, the homes were burned, the women, children, and old people were sent off to refugee camps. Jonathan Schell, in his book The Village of Ben Suc, describes such an operation. A village surrounded, attacked, a man riding on a bicycle shot down, three people picnicking by the river shot to death, the houses destroyed, the women, children, old people herded together, taken away from their ancestral homes. The CIA in Vietnam, in a program called Operation Phoenix, secretly, without trial, executed at least 20,000 civilians in South Vietnam who were suspected of being members of the communist underground. A pro-administration analyst wrote in the journal Foreign Affairs in January 1975, "Although the Phoenix program did undoubtedly kill or incarcerate many innocent civilians, it did also eliminate many members of the communist infrastructure."